When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Welcome in to an Atlanta Soccer Tonight special. It's been a busy, busy day on the Atlanta United front. There were whispers that it could be a busy day, but the things just kept on going. We've got two new central midfielders to talk about. One is a returning homegrown who did not go into the Super Draft. The Super Draft is happening today, and Atlanta United does not have a first-round pick in the Super Draft because they traded that to bring in a designated player from another club in the league who is not going to be a designated player here, and we'll get into that. And then the club rounded everything off by announcing Ronnie Dela as the new head coach, the fifth head coach in Atlanta United history. So when all those things happen, that means we have to do an AST special, and that means I'm joined by Mike Conti. What's up?
I'm excited. You know, now here we go. Here's Mike and Jason. They're excited about everything that's happened. No, I'm totally
What are we supposed to be right now?
We're supposed to be dishonest with our listeners and pretend that we're not excited about this.
Do we have to flip a coin to see who takes what side? Is that how these games go now?
Apparently in 2024 in social discourse, that's what it is. Now, I've been on the record. I said it in Orlando. I said it again Wednesday night when we were at Brew House. If it were up to me, Rob Valentino would be the coach right now. However, he's not. And I think Ronnie Dela, of the people that had been attached to this job in the rumor sphere, is rumor sphere a word? I'm going to coin that.
You know, I like it.
For all the names that had kind of been floating around that were associated with this vacancy, I think Ronnie Dela is the best Atlanta United could have done. And I'm optimistic because he's got a really good pedigree. He's been a winner. He's been a winner in a couple different leagues. He's been a winner in Major League Soccer. Huge. I really loved what I heard in his press conference today. I loved what he said about he's keen on developing younger players, but he wants to develop older players too. I think that's been a little bit of a stick in the mud for Atlanta United the last couple of years, where veteran players have not necessarily developed. Veteran players come in, they play well, and then maybe they start to regress a little bit. I think development of older players, veteran players, your established core is a very important thing. Loved hearing that. Loved hearing just his philosophy on leadership and how he wants to lead his team and how he wants all of his players to feel respected and listened to and loved, and it's very important that his players all have fun. Loved hearing that. I and don't think for a second that that's not a recruitment message to players around the world who will be contacted by Atlanta United over the next couple of weeks.
Be careful. Remember, we had a lot of people that were lecturing us about Greg Berhalter making things too comfortable and too much fun for the U.S. men's national team. And that was the problem for the USMNT. Oh. That was it.
Oh.
He actually made the space a fun one to be in, and that's the problem.
Seldom, Jason, have I covered a team where things didn't go well, and the final analysis was it didn't go well because the coach created too comfortable or fun of an atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not used to that one being an actual real reason for failure.
You know what? I'm going to kind of roll the dice here on Ronnie Dela creating a comfortable, fun atmosphere for his players. I'm going to take a leap of faith that I think that might work out, that strategy. How to work out for Gabby Heinze doing the opposite. Didn't even make it 6 months. So really liked what I heard there. Started to dig into his numbers a little bit. And it's tough. When he was in Scotland, they didn't have Opta. In 2014, 2015, 2016, they did not have Opta in Scotland. So a lot of the advanced stats on his Celtic teams, I could not find at least. But
it was a weird time as well in Scotland. He brought a lot of modernization to Celtic itself. And just the league at that time, that was when Rangers was not in the top flight. That was when they were reorganizing. So some people have tried to discredit his title wins from that time because of that, which, look, Scotland is its own animal. I think the thing to keep in mind about his time there that is so important is how he brought new ideas to the club, got them going in the right direction, and two really important players that he gave a lot of responsibility to and helped develop, Virgil van Dijk, who was at the club at that time, and Kieran Tierney, who was at the club at that time. That's something that has always stood out to me, is that he's going to put the best team on the field, in his opinion. It's not about age. It's not about resume. It's about what they bring to the table under his leadership. And I think he's been able to do that throughout his career.
Yeah, agreed. And even of the limited data, you know, because I like to look at numbers. I count on you to give me more of the people analysis. I look more at numbers because I know what numbers mean. His Celtic teams outscored that league by a lot.
Not abnormal.
But in 2015, I think his team had 84 goals. The next closest had like 59.
Yeah.
So that is a good indication to me. Then I looked at his New York City teams, and I was really pumped to see statistically what those New York City teams did under him. I picked out the season where they won the cup, but it was also his only full non-COVID season in MLS. Led the league in progressive passes right at the time. They led the league in key passes. They were right at the top in shot creating actions. I think they led the league in shots on target. They were third in the league in goals. All of that suggests, and they were near the bottom in crosses, which really stood out to me. So, you know, when we talk about progressive passes, key passes, now caveat.
Yeah, we'll talk about crosses in a minute.
Well, and caveat, when your home field's at Yankee Stadium, you could have a key pass in your own half. So there is a little bit of a caveat there.
And crosses are going to look different there.
Much different. Different.
It's interesting as I've kind of dug in on him a little bit stylistically and all of those things. And we're going to have over at Soccer Down Here, we're going to have a piece from Jarrett Smith later today. So be on the lookout for it. Jarrett, as we know, is a Celtic fan. He has been a big proponent of Ronnie Dela and what he can bring to the table. So he goes deep diving into this. To give a teaser, one of the things that Ronnie's teams have had consistency about is they do get wide and put in crosses from a broad sense a lot. I think at Yankee Stadium, you weren't able to do that so much. And I think also, and this is where stats can be a bit of a challenge, some of the crosses that he likes are not the looping cross looking for a guy to head it home. It's the cutbacks to the top of the 18. It's the cutbacks from the end line to the penalty spot that might not get considered to be a cross, but are coming from wide positions and being put back into the middle. So I think from kind of a broad sense of how he wants to have his teams attack, and he is a very attack-minded coach, and he said that today, mm-hmm. he wants his teams to get vertical at the right moments. He does like possession, but it's not about a certain number. It's not about a certain number of passes before getting forward. It's about control. He wants to get vertical when the time is right, and he wants to exploit kind of those wide positions to create from, not always the same way as others. It's not always about putting in a cross for a forward to head. It's getting wide to create opportunities in a variety of ways. And I think that's what we'll see here. And I think he's got so far the building blocks of a team that is well suited to that.
Well, the other thing I really liked about his New York City teams, and Atlanta played him three times in 21. They did not play in 20. They played three times in 21, and then he was gone by the time they got him in 22. That was the remember the Dom Dwyer, I think, had an equalizer in that game. It was 4th of July. We had COVID, so we weren't there. It was a while ago. But I think Nick Cushing was in charge of the
defense. That was a wild game, yeah.
Yeah. But in the three games under Dyla, I remember that New York City team played with an edge. And in fact, that NYC team led the league in red cards. They were among the league leaders in fouls. That's something we talked about this past year, how maybe Atlanta United didn't play with enough of an edge. Some of that comes down to personnel. I mean, you're not going to be going out and signing a guy just to be a bruiser who's going to go out and foul everyone. But I did like the fact that Dayla's teams, they were attack-oriented, but when they lost the ball, they fought like hell to get it back. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something he's probably going to try to reinforce here in Atlanta. That wasn't necessarily not the style of Atlanta, by the way, the last couple of years, but I think you're going to see a further commitment to that. So I really liked what I heard today. Now, everyone wins the press conference.
Not always, but often, yeah.
If you don't, it's a bad sign.
This is true.
However, the Lions coach, Dan Campbell, he lost his open press.
That's the one that I immediately thought of, too. Yeah.
We talked about Heinze. I remember Heinze. He came in here. He did that opening press conference, and he barked at Winkler for trying to end it because he wanted to talk more and share ideas and thoughts with us. I'm like, ooh, we're going to like this guy. Yeah, not so much. I got a totally different vibe today from Ronnie Dayla. And just talking to some people who worked with him at New York City, the consensus I've gotten from them is Dayla is not going to like talking about winning and losing as much as the importance of leadership to him. And those qualities of a coach that aren't necessarily measured strictly by wins and losses. I think this is someone who, you know, when he was late in his playing career, just reading about him today, when he was late in his playing career, he went to Liverpool to study how their coaches did what they did. He went to a couple other big clubs in England.
He went to Manchester City, the City Football Group, a lot.
I think he went to Dortmund or someone in Germany, a really big club there, to do the same thing. He wanted to be a sponge. He wanted to study. It sounds like, based on what I've been told by people who knew him in New York, that this is someone who's really tried to take chunks of best practices from everywhere he's been and pile all of that into what he is now as a manager and a leader. And I'm going to be really fascinated to see how that connection now manifests with his players. And not just the players who are already here, but the players that he's going to bring in. Because this is all going to unfold pretty quickly. 5 weeks from tomorrow, there's a preseason game on 92.9 The Game, by the way.
Breaking news.
92.9 The Game. 5 weeks from tomorrow. I mean, they're going to be opening training camp probably in less than 3 weeks. So this is all going to unfold very quickly. And yeah, they've got to build a team. And they've got to find two designated players, probably find a couple more kind of rank and file players. They've got to build a team, but this is all going to, the get to know you process is going to have to unfold very quickly, especially because they're probably not going to do anything next week for the holidays.
Right.
Outside of maybe like we were there on Tuesday and a couple of players were milling about working out.
Locally. Yeah, it's been a busy week. It's crazy. We were up there not that long ago.
No. Yeah. Yeah, to hire a general manager, which is not a director, which isn't insignificant either. So he's going to have to get to work really quickly. And I was not under the impression that he was in Atlanta when he spoke to us today.
No.
So that's going to be a process. In fact, heck, I don't even know what his visa situation is right now and all the mechanics that go into play with that. So a lot to work out in a very short period of time. You're bringing in a new technical staff as well. It's my understanding the entirety of Atlanta United's existing staff is out. So all the Rob Valentino assistants are out. So quite frankly, you know, for people who are going in right now just to get on the treadmill, I don't even know who they're working with at this point. I'm sure there's someone. But, you know, all the sports science, that's all been kind of changed. So I don't know who's left really to run things from a player standpoint until – Ronnie and his staff get into town, and that's going to have to be sooner rather than later.
You might have Dave Tenney in the building by now, director of high performance, and there might be some staff underneath him that are overseeing some things. I would imagine he's probably wanted to bring in some people alongside. So, yeah, there'll be a plan of some sort in that regard. And, you know, Chris and Garth have some experience in these things as well in terms of just guiding directionally. One thing that stood out to me as we got a chance to talk to Ronnie Dela today, and we'll play a couple clips from that here in this podcast. And I do want to get into the roster stuff from today as well, with two new players coming into the first team roster that will be part of this conversation. It really stood out to me just the passion for the job. You know, you mentioned being a sponge and soaking up information from others. I would not be surprised if we see Ronnie sitting down with Raheem Morris to talk about leadership and to talk about coaching. Same with Quinn Snyder and learning from how they do in their sports. I think Ronnie has learned over the years from somebody like Pep Guardiola, who has brought in elements from other sports and put them through the filter to fit into a soccer context. And those are two people that are very different in Atlanta, and I think the way they approach things, and I think Ronnie's kind of somewhere in between the two, just an initial take on how he will be as a leader. I think that would be interesting. I hope that they chat. I want to start with this one in terms of clips. I had the chance to ask him about developing young players, because that's something I mentioned. Virgil van Dijk, I mentioned Tierney. You know, I loved where he took the answer, because it didn't go exactly where I thought it was going to go, and it was so much better. Here's Ronnie Dela answering my question about developing young players.
So I like to develop old players also. There's not only the young. I want every player in the team that wanted to get better. But of course, some players, they have reached their top, and then it's difficult to, then you just have to try to maintain their level as something different. So these kind of players that is older, they need to have a level that is above the rest almost, because they have to put the standards every day. And they also have to see themselves as leaders and being with me to develop these young talents that we had. So, but, you know, I think in every club we've been, again, everybody a chance. And we come in and, you know, we, as I said, I don't care about what's happened next week or next week after, but when 3 months has gone, if you haven't developed then, and we have a challenge together. He has a challenge, I have a challenge, and that we as a club have a challenge. Because everybody needs to get better all the time. If not, we're standing still. And if you go in circle, then I'm a guy that gets very impatient, and I can't over time work with people that doesn't have ambitions or doesn't want to improve or does not is not able to improve. So there are demands, a lot of support and teaching and trust and love into the process. But at the end, we have as a group has to develop and also as individuals. And when you find talented players that has skills, of course, but also have attitude that is special, then you can create unbelievable things. And I've met many on my way. I've also met players that haven't taken the steps that they should have done. But when they have that, it's easy to give them opportunities because you know over time and consistency in your messages and in playing time, you will get out the best of him. And like when we were in New York, like with Tati Castellano, he was a diamond that was not fully ready in that time when I come in. But, you know, we were patient and we kept working and we could see every day his ambitions and his hunger. And in the end, also his ability to learn. And when you have these things, then big things can happen. So that can be from a 17-year-old boy, but also can be a 25-year-old boy and a 30-year-old boy. You know, that's a man. I mean, 30 years of man, but then that's not a boy anymore. But so I think it's because I believe when I see it, I give them opportunities and then they develop. And
a long answer, a really thorough answer, and covering so much ground. Like, I did not see that coming when I asked the question. I love that he brought up Tati Castellanos. You bring up Tati to me, and you're going to get an instant thumbs up. What he did in developing a very raw, a very, as he said, he wasn't quite a diamond yet. Getting him from where he was when he walked in the door at NYC to the amount of money that the club made in terms of the transfer out. And I think in the MLS Cup winning year, he scored 23 goals. Like, that's right there. So impressive. And to not think about development as purely a young player thing. I loved the answer. And immediately after that, like, I'm fist pumping and like, all right, let's get preseason started.
Yeah, Tati Castellanos went from 7 goals in 2020, COVID season, but 7 goals in 2020 to 23 and the golden boot in the span of 1 year. Again, like I said earlier, I think one thing that has frustrated me about Atlanta United over the last couple of years is we have seen older players, veteran players regress. And I think at times the club has been too patient with some of those players. And I like what I heard from Ronnie Dela in saying that, you know, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. You're never staying the same. And for the players that are getting worse, it's his job to develop them and make them better, but within a set amount of time where, you know, if it takes too long, we're going to move on and we're going to look at other options. I mean, those are not his direct words, but I think it's a fair characterization of what you just heard him say. Yeah. I love it. I love it. You know, we talk so much, Jason, about the importance of developing your academy players and your second teamers and your young first teamers, and look at what they've done in developing a guy like Jay Fortune, who I think is going to be an immense piece in this 2025 team. Look at what they did in developing you know, Caleb Wiley and George Bello and some of the players who have since moved on to other places in Europe. That's vitally important, but we overlook sometimes that your veteran players need to continue their ascendancy as well. And I think that's just something that has not been fully there for Atlanta United over the last 6-7 years. So I like it. That answer was probably what stood out to me the most in the entire press conference today, and I was really happy to hear it.
You mentioned developing young players. You mentioned academy players. You mentioned homegrown. You mentioned Jay Fortune. That kind of leads us into the roster side of things, because the team's been very busy today. Yes. I'm scrolling back through the emails that have gone out today and press releases, and man, there's quite a few. It started this morning with Will Riley, a homegrown signing that I had the chance to see a lot with Atlanta United too before he went to college, and he just got better and better in college at Stanford and played a lot for a top program at the D1 level. I think it says a lot about him character-wise as well to be academically eligible at a Stanford and play as much as he did. It says a lot about the IQ of Will Riley. But I think you saw it on the field with him during his time here with Atlanta United too. I know Tony Annan loved Riley. The other coaches that have been at the club loved Riley and what he brought to the table. And when he left, it was really, really close on if he was ready for a homegrown deal at that time. He might have been. It was close to a toss-up, and I think maybe one of the questions would have been the physicality aspect of it. I think he's a little bit bigger. I think he's a little bit stronger, and I think he's a much better player now, and his time in college will help him walk in the door and be competitive. He's going to compete with Jay Fortune for playing time. He's going to compete with Tristan Muyamba and Bartosz Szlich for playing time. And there's another guy in that room as well, Mateusz Klik, who the rumor started last night about coming in from DC United. It's a very MLS kind of deal in that he's a designated player at DC. He will remain a designated player on DC's roster. So the one of those spots is taken up there, not here. He won't be a designated player here, and it looks like there's not gonna be a whole lot of implications on the salary cap here in Atlanta either. And you're the guy who had double digit assists last season from DC United.
Really like that you're bringing in someone of that pedigree to come in and compete. I don't want to necessarily say Klik is a depth piece because I think that has a negative connotation to it, but he certainly improves the depth in the midfield now. And I'm telling you, Dax McCarty's departure, I think, would have been felt way more acutely than most fans would realize if a move like this did not come today. So I'm thrilled with bringing in Klik, because it's such a low risk maneuver the way that they did this. It's not taking up a designated player spot. No Gam was traded. No Tam was traded. You might lose $50,000 if you sign him to a new contract. That's a lunch in this league. That's no big deal. You lose a super draft pick. You know, honestly,
Will Riley is essentially that super draft pick.
That was your 23rd overall pick today, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, someone actually, I thought it was interesting. Someone texted me last night. They were making a big deal about Klik's age and how this is a reversal in philosophy for Atlanta United. It's not really, though. In fact, Derek Williams, I think, was 31 when he was signed last year. Saba, I think, was 30 when they signed him. Quentin Westberg was, he's a goalkeeper, so it's a little bit different, but he was 36 when they signed him. Jamal, I think, was 30 when they brought him in. Yep. So this is not, I don't think this is a, and then obviously Dax was 36 when they brought him in. So I don't think this is outside the norm or a reversal in philosophy for Atlanta United in any way. I think you have seen, and I think it's a smart idea, a pivot to bringing in more MLS experienced players into the team, because I think that's really important. I think we've seen, not just with Atlanta United, but across the league, bringing in players from outside MLS. This is a weird league to adjust to with all the travel and all the weather and different playing surfaces and the length of the season and the schedule being what it is. It is a very, very difficult league to adapt to, and it's a challenging league. Everyone's good. There's a lot of parity in this league, and it's because of the way the salary cap works. a lot of players with great pedigrees, with awesome reputations, have been brought into this league and have landed flat on their face because they haven't been able to make the adjustment. I like taking low-risk moves like this, bringing in players who I think are comfortable with the and are proven to be comfortable with the intricacies of Major League Soccer, and will also help you from a leadership standpoint. Yeah. I think Mateus Klik, you know, he checks off all those boxes, and he's played in big leagues elsewhere. Yeah. So he's got a great pedigree.
He immediately becomes someone that will help Bartosz Lisz reach his full potential with their shared experiences with the Polish national team. Klik represented them over 40 times. You saw a picture posted today by the club of them greeting one another when DC and Atlanta played this season. That's somebody that's going to help Bartosz Lisz be an even better player. I think it gives you a lot of flexibility, too, if you're Ronnie Dela, because you can play three central midfielders and still have a guy in Klik who can create chances. You know, you're talking about somebody who had 19 assists in a season for Leeds United, had 11 for DC United. You know, this is a chance creator who's not a pure 10. So you could play a midfield of Sleash, Fortune, and Klik and have Maranchuk wide and have Sabo wide. Go get a striker. I think that's something that everybody is waiting to see who that will be. But bringing in Klik, it doesn't prevent you from signing another designated player in an attacking position. It gives you the flexibility to make sure that's the right player. And if it's not there in January, you can wait.
Two things. First of all, didn't Chris Henderson say on Tuesday, maybe kind of tipped his hat a little bit, he said to us that he would be looking for players who could complement Maranchuk.
Yeah.
You've just done that by bringing in Mateus Klik.
Secondly,
who was it and when? It was relatively recently when we got a hint that they might be looking at a defender as a designated player.
Garth said it about possibly a defender, and then it kind of got lost in all the ether of everything. Is possible.
And I think it becomes even a little more possible.
Yeah.
You have to sign a center forward as one of your designated players.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But now I think, that door is absolutely open. It's unconventional. Montreal did that with Wanyama. Atlanta technically did it with Alan Franco, but that was procedural more
than different. Gregerson fell into that as well. Different.
Yeah.
You can commit. And look, here's the thing is you can commit resources to your back line and it can pay off really big. I mean, Atlanta committing resources in year one to Michael Parkhurst paid off. It's really, really big. You have to have a strong defense. I think you're typically going to spend your designated player money up front, but you don't have to spend it equally in two designated players. You can spend a lot of it in one, and you can spend less of it on the second one if it's the right player. And look, maybe that's a fullback, maybe that's a center back. I don't think it would be a central midfielder because that room is pretty crowded as is, but who knows? Whatever you now, in my opinion, have the luxury with getting Klik. You have the luxury of getting the best available player to you in that other designated player spot and making all the pieces fit. It doesn't have to be a 10. It doesn't have to be a winger. And it's going to be a crowded schedule. You know, the schedule came out yesterday, another piece of news that has been chaotic in this week. We don't know the League's Cup schedule. We don't know the Open Cup format. We don't know which competition or both Atlanta United will be part of in 2025. I would assume at least one of them.
Yes.
You're going to want to have a deep squad that can rotate through. You're going to miss guys to international competition at various stages. You need to have a deep squad that has flexibility. And I think Ronnie Dela is the kind of coach who is not going to get so rigid in, I have Alexi Maranchuk and he will only play this position and never play another position on the field. No, that's not how it's going to work. There's going to be moments where matchups might push him into a different spot. Availability might push him into a different spot. Shaking things up can push him into a different spot. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of flexibility now. And I think more than anything, getting Klik gives you the ability to not have to spend just to spend in January and not be locked into a position just to be locked into a position. Got to get a nine. And outside of that, you have another designated player spot that you can spend on the best player available to help this team.
It reminds me a little bit of the 2017-18 offseason when they went out and got Nagbe. They did not need to use a designated player spot to get Nagbe, but it solidified everything in the midfield where now you only had one designated player spot to play with then, but you were able to go out and find the best player you could possibly find anywhere, which was Ezekiel Barco. And you're dealing with two spots, not one, but this feels awfully similar.
You're essentially dealing with one because I think one has to be a nine. And I think you know that at this stage. Like, that's locked. The best nine you can get is who you need to get for this team to be able to reach its goals. I don't think there's another way around that. So that's the priority. The other one, it's not a luxury piece, but it gives you so much more flexibility in terms of who you go get that makes this team better. You're not locked into any position.
Yep. No, agreed. I don't know.
And I have no idea. I don't know who either one's going to be.
And that's a remarkable thing. And I know the window isn't open yet. Man, they've done a good job keeping all this quiet. I didn't hear anything about Mateus Quick until last night.
Yeah.
I haven't heard.
And that came out of Washington.
Right. I haven't heard anything about center forward. I haven't heard anything about who they're targeting internationally right now.
Been a couple of little rumors here and there, but nothing big, nothing reputable.
Nothing 10 alarm, you know. I did think it was interesting. Jonathan Spector was at the Will Riley thing today. That would indicate to me that he is still running the scouting right now.
Yes.
You know, I'm just getting bits and pieces on who's left. I know a lot of changes have been made in the front office. A lot. And a lot of it doesn't touch soccer, but there's been a lot of things that have happened over the last month. And there's going to be a lot of new faces up there next year. But it looks like, and I think Speck was even mentioned by name, along with Arjun, who's been running their analytics by Chris Henderson and Garth Lagerwey on Tuesday. So that tells me that the scouting and analytics piece is still intact for the same group that worked under Carlos Bocanegra.
At least the leadership of it. Yeah.
At least the leadership of it. And I think that's significant because the moves you're going to make in this window, the seeds probably needed to be planted months ago.
At the end of the last window. I mean, and remember, you know, I had the chance to sit down with Garth and Demetrios at the end of that last window. And there were guys that they were really wanting to get in the summer. That they couldn't get at the time. They ran out of time. The calendars didn't line up. You could make an offer and the club on the other side could say, you know what, we're going to wait 2 more weeks and wait and see if we can get a better offer. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. I don't know who the players were, but you already had that list. So maybe positionally things have changed a little bit, but I would assume they were looking at a nine. Then they're looking at a nine. Now you already have a list. I'm sure there's been a few additions to the list based off what's happened over the past few months around the world. Maybe a couple guys have fallen off of that list, but you had something to start from. Yeah. And this group is always working. There's always lists. There's always the list of what we need if we have to go get somebody tomorrow. There's the list of who we would love to get at some point. There's the list of up-and-coming young talents that you would hope would be available. All of those lists are there, and the people who I think have helped compile them are still in place and will be helping in Chris Henderson with his eye for talent and what he wants with Ronnie Dela's input. You know, I think a lot of people get maybe twisted about how things work in this sport and how they think they should. Coaches aren't driving the transfer market. You can't. And I think it ties back into a question from the press conference today about how long Ronnie Dela would want to be here. And he said all the right things about how he wants to put down roots. He's bounced around a few places for a variety of reasons and would like to be somewhere for a long time. But the facts are head coaches aren't in general. I do like that he mentioned Arsenal and how they've given Mikel Arteta time. City, obviously with Pep Guardiola, Liverpool previously with Klopp. I think there's a huge benefit to giving coaches time. I would always lean in that direction. But the business is what the business is. And in some of the leagues that Ronnie has been in, coaches have not gotten time at all. Less time than coaches have gotten in Major League Soccer, which is an increasingly shorter period of time to win.
Right.
Look at the list of coaches right now. There's only, I think, 4 or 5 guys that have been there for more than 2 seasons. So it's a challenge. So that being said, when people say like, oh, the coach has to drive the players and pick these players, the coach might not be there when those players come good. You have to have a second section, and Darren Eales talked about this in the past, and I think Garth Lagerwey has talked about this. You have to have your sporting director. You have to have your staff in place that is part of the DNA of the club, and they will change too, but less often than the coach. They have to drive it. They have to set the lists. They have to go get the talent. You have the coach's input when you get down to the final stages. The coach might have a name of a player they'd love to go get. Great. Bring it to the table. Let's see what we can make happen. But then when you get down to, we have the opportunity to sign player X, player A, or player K, do you have a preference? And increasingly coaches now, and I think Ronnie fits into this kind of bucket, increasingly coaches now are like, those 3 players that you have given me, all I can make work, they all fit into the way that I would want to play, go get the best deal. And that's what it comes down to. It's not about the coach driving the transfer business. So these things have been ongoing for a long time, preceding Chris Henderson. He's going to now have that say. He's going to have input and push things into a certain direction. I'm sure he's got lists. So now you can go and get the best players, and you've got that crucial last element of a coach's piece of input. Because out of those 3 players you look at, yeah, maybe there's one that the coach has worked with. Maybe there's one that the coach's best friend has worked with. And that's the one that maybe, you know what, all things being considered equal here, I like that guy a little bit more just because I know a little more about him.
So Miami, and Chris Henderson was a team builder there. Tata Martino's relationship with Julian Gressel was a huge, huge factor in Julian Gressel ending up there. That is absolutely a very, very common thing that happens around the league, but it's a committee decision. It's not a singular decision.
It's rarely the coach making the decision at the end. They might be on the committee. In some cases, they might not even be on the committee, but they're not the one pulling the trigger.
Yeah. And I think that's important to note for the subset of observers out there who are convinced that the coach built the championship team of 2018 in Atlanta and not the technical director, because in reality, it was a total opposite of that. But again, I'm encouraged. I thought this was obviously one of the most transformative weeks a club could possibly ever have. I think we had been, at full transparency, I think we had been hearing Ronnie Dayla's name attached to this opening for quite some time. We had heard some other names attached to it too. So I'll go back to what I said earlier. Of the names that I was aware of, I was most excited about Ronnie Dayla. I'm glad they settled on that. Chris Henderson, I think, is a name that we knew would be in the mix because of his relationship with Garth Lagerwey, and that came to be. But now that it's official, it's time to go to work, and there's not going to be a lot of time to get to work before things really get going. So with all of these hires in place, it's going to be an incredibly active, exciting, you know, sometimes maybe puzzling next few weeks for Atlanta United. But I am very, very excited about the ride that is to come. And I'm really excited that it appears they have picked a manager that is committed to that Atlanta United club profile that we've talked so much about, a team that wants to attack, a team that wants to play on the front foot, and a team that wants to win the ball back when they lose it. And I think there was something he said, maybe even when he was at New York City, about preferring to win a game 5-4 to 1-0, but he wouldn't mind winning a game 1-0. You know, again, that's my thing too. I don't care how you win, just win. and let's get the feeling back that we had at the end of October going into November, because those were a couple really special weeks upon which to build. You know, the leadership nucleus of that team is back in Brad Guzan, and a lot of the outfield players that were core to that run. I think the Ronald Hernandez re-signing is a major, major thing that has not been talked about enough. Just someone who's so central to the personality of this club and well-respected in the dressing room, and someone who bleeds for the club. You need more guys like Ronald Hernandez on this team. That I thought was enormous. Brad coming back for another year, not that it was a surprise, enormous.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Build around that, and I think we're going to have a really good season to come. At least I hope. And I can't believe it's going to be here sooner rather than later. I'm really, really, really bummed. I wanted San Diego to be a road game, but
I was kind of hoping that we do get to go to Austin for the first time. That's cool. Yeah.
You know what's funny? We have let's see. We've been to LAFC three times since the last time we were in Houston. Or Minnesota, or I think Vancouver.
Vancouver,
yeah. We were in Vancouver in 19, but I think we were in LAFC after that.
Yes, like, we were.
Who's doing all this? Like, we're going to Colorado. We're going to Colorado for the third time since we've been to Houston or Minnesota. We haven't been to Minnesota's new stadium ever.
Yeah.
Last time we were in Minnesota, they were playing at the Golden Gopher Stadium. So, oh, well, that's my
balance. Yeah, an unbalanced schedule. That's how it's going to go. And you're going to get Atlanta and the LA teams as much as possible.
Yeah.
Seattle as much as possible. The high profile games. I think San Diego will be a very high profile game. Great. It'll be in Atlanta this time around. Yeah. That trip to LA, the next to last game of the regular season, that's a tricky spot for that one to fall.
Yeah.
On the schedule, I'm very, very happy that we're in Toronto and Montreal in the summer, especially Toronto.
Yeah,
that was a date that I looked for straight away after our experience there.
No, no cold weather games.
Yeah,
no cold. I mean, Charlotte on March 2nd might be the one tricky one.
Yeah, that's about like it would be here. So
yeah, what else stood out to me? I immediately chat to that on the Canadian team.
Where is Toronto in the schedule? Okay, cool. It's in its
own. Oh, are they even going to let me back in Montreal Stadium? Hopefully, I'm glad it's in August. Hopefully, tensions will have simmered by then. One other thing. Be careful. Be really, really careful if you are planning to travel to that Miami match in June. It's during the Club World Cup. If Miami somehow makes it out of group in the Club World Cup, that match is going to be moved.
Okay.
So make sure if you're thinking about going to that Inter-Miami match in late June down in Fort Lauderdale, get refundable tickets or get trip insurance. I don't know if Miami is likely to get grouped or not, but if they
it's
get out,
not likely they get out of the group, but yeah. It could happen, you know?
Yeah, you never know. That match would be moved. As far as Leagues Cup is concerned, the rumor I heard is that the 18 teams that made the playoffs are going to play Leagues Cup. The 12 teams that did not will go to Open Cup. But I don't know how that works because two of the non-qualifying playoff teams were Canadian.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure if that's true or not. But I have heard there's some momentum to it being one or the other, not both. And I think moving Leagues Cup to weeknights and playing the league schedule throughout, I think that's a good move.
I just the element of Leagues Cup that I loved, that I've heard. Now, I want to see if it comes to fruition. Champions League, I don't necessarily love the idea of the Swiss model with scheduling and all of that, where you're not like in a group exactly. You're playing teams from the rest of the field in certain pots. I love it in this case because if you do Leagues Cup the way that you should, if you have 18 Mexican clubs, 18 MLS clubs, and your three games in a group stage or a preliminary round are against Mexican clubs, great. Mm-hmm. That's what it should be. That's perfect. So if you play, you know, and yes, you should have to go to Mexico at sometimes if they want to host games there. And that hasn't always been the case. But if you play, if Atlanta plays in August, Atlas with our old friend Gonzalo Pineda, that would be amazing. Plays Club America and plays, you know, Cholos. Okay, cool. If two of those are here and one of those is in Mexico City or somewhere else, great. Playing in the League's Cup, playing the interleague matches is the important thing. I think what hurt the competition at times in the group stage was playing another MLS team or two Mexican teams playing. The game felt weird. The DC game was one of the craziest games we called all last season. But it's just kind of weird, I think, to explain to people when it's a knockout game later in the competition, different story. But in those preliminary round games, I love the idea of the Swiss model. I've seen it reported. I hope that's what they do. And you only play teams from the other league in the preliminary round. Then you go into a bracket and you play it out.
How do you
I'm all on board with that.
Like, how do you do it? Do you just go straight knockout all the way through? Like, how do you do a group stage?
I would do a preliminary round. It's like the Champions League this year where you're playing, I think, 8 group games, but you're not in a group. It's the 32 teams that are there. You're playing, I think they have it subdivided into 4 pods, and you're playing a couple teams from one pod, a couple teams from another pod, a couple teams from another pod. And then you have an overall league table. I think in this case, and if you have 18 and 18, you play 3 games against teams from the other league, and maybe they're subdivided and you play one from the top third, one from the middle third, one from the bottom third.
Mm-hmm.
And you divide them all out and you play your 3 games. And then the top, I don't know if it's going to be 16 that go through into a bracket. Cool. I think that is the way to do it, to where you're going to play 3 games or 2 games, whatever you end up doing. It doesn't matter to me, whichever way you go. but you're only going to play your preliminary round games against teams from the other league rather than playing teams from your own league. I think that helps a lot for the competition.
That, yeah, I like that. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes I'm sense. Really hoping yeah. that's the way they go. Well,
and honestly, I think that's what fans want to see.
Yes.
Quite frankly.
Yes.
I think that's what fans want to see. I like the League's Cup.
I do too.
I think we're the League's Cup sickos that might be in the minority. I love that tournament. I've had a lot of fun with it. It's not been personally fun in Atlanta, but I think it's created a lot of compelling soccer over the last 2 years. I'm glad they're going to find a way to keep it going and keep the importance maintained where you get three Champions Cup spots coming out of it. So I'm glad to see that nothing's really being fully abandoned. So we'll see if this is a move in the right direction or not. I'm just glad that you're not going to be staring down the barrel of a three-week break.
Yeah.
In a pretty sweet spot of the sports calendar where not much else is going on. Atlanta United certainly did not benefit from the idle time of 3 weeks off in August the last 2 years.
So. It's funny. They didn't in terms of awareness and attention and all those things, but they did this time in some ways.
They did win their first. Well, in fact, in both cases, it launched them to pretty good finishes.
Yeah.
More so maybe in 23 than 24, but they did win their first match after League's Cup in both cases. No, I'm sorry. I had that wrong.
24, they didn't. But look
next,
at the record after League's Cup versus the record before, and it did help in that case. That kind of ties into how I wanted to end this, because there was another clip from the press conference that I wanted to play, and I think it says a lot about who Ronnie Dela is as a person. The question was from Allison Mastrangelo, friend of the station, at WSB, asking about the group that he's inheriting and kind of where this group is, what he'd like to add to it. And it shows the complete and utter class that Dela has when he started this answer. Here's what he had to say about the team as he's taken over.
I've seen a lot of the games, especially in the end of the season. And I think, it's Rob has done a fantastic foundation to the team before. So I think that makes the job easier for me because it's a structure in the bottom here. It's a good team spirit. I see that also. I see that also in the playoffs. I saw players having more energy into the games, that they played like we have nothing to lose. And I think that's when we talk about consequence thinking again, I think that's not very positive. When you're in a big club, you have to love to play and love to go on the pitch. And then if you lose then and you have given everything, then, then we have to get better. But when you get the best out of yourself and the best out of the team and you go out there and you attack the situation, you have the best chance to win. And I think that's a thing that I saw in the team in the end when you beat Miami. That's was a fantastic team effort and good tactically. And this guy.
I'll end it there. Not a lot of managers, when they come in and take over in the situation by name, credit the previous person in charge. And Ronnie didn't have to do that. I think it says a lot about who he is as a person to say that, look, you can talk about the regular season, you can talk about the record of that, but where he picks up that mantle as the fifth manager in Atlanta United history, it's not as bad as some might lead you to believe because of how it ended and honestly where Rob kind of got the team too before his time ended here. And that's going to be a big help to Ronnie taking over to come in with momentum off of that and be able to point back to that and say, that's the personality of who I want this group to be.
Yeah, agreed. And by the way, just as an aside, I think that's another example of how well-respected Rob is across the soccer community. And I don't want to harp on that anymore because Ronnie Dela is our manager now and that's where we're going forward. But Tata Martino said a lot of very, very nice complimentary things about Rob during the playoff series. And I agree. I think that really stood out to me as a class move by Ronnie Dela. I'm looking forward to working with him and I'm looking forward to learning how he sees the game. It'll be fun. We've been very, very lucky, and we've talked about this openly. Gonzalo Pineda and Rob Valentino were incredibly accessible to us in allowing us really a peek behind the curtain to understand their tactical philosophies and how they saw the game. It'll be really fun now to get Ronnie Dayla's perspective, because he comes from a completely different corner of the world and a completely different pedigree. And it'll be fascinating to see how he looks at the game compared to his predecessors.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm ready to get this thing started. It's very quick. I'm sure we'll have a lot of content between now and then, then being the start of training camp, which isn't that long from now. Usually we do a lot around the kickoff of training camp. I would assume we'll do that again here this upcoming season. And then we're in Chattanooga in 5 weeks, and then we're in Birmingham the next week after that. So it's not far away. There's going to be rumors. Make sure you check your sources before you get excited, people. Always check your sources. There's going to be a lot of rumors, a lot of players linked, a lot of accounts on social media platforms that have 200 followers that are going to be throwing things out there. Be careful about what you read and what you believe. We will try to filter as much of that for you as well. And we'll have Atlanta Soccer Tonight's along the way as well. Schedule's different because of the holiday calendar as well, but there will be content on Off the Woodwork throughout now to the opening of training camp, because even with all the activity today, there's going to be a lot more to come with some, I would assume, high-profile additions coming to this roster between now and then. So it's going to be fun. But if you don't catch any of the additional material, have a happy holiday, and we'll be talking to you very, very soon.